First of all, let's talk about Mrs. Manoah. Y'all know who Mrs. Manoah is? That's Samson's mom. Judges chapter 13 is where we find her story. And in this one, we're going to read the whole chapter, just about. But it's not long, and I think you'll find it interesting. So start with me at chapter 13, verse 1. It says, the sons of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord. Oops, sorry, I'm not wearing a collar mic tonight. I'll just stand back here. And so the Lord gave them into the hands of the Philistines 40 years. So how long would 40 years go back to from right now? Yeah, all the way back into the 1900s. That's a long time. There was a certain man of Zorah, the family of the Danites, whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and had no children. Then the angel of the Lord appeared to the woman and said to her, behold, now you are barren and have borne no children, but you shall conceive and give birth to a son. Now therefore be careful not to drink wine or strong drink or eat any unclean thing, for behold, you shall conceive and give birth to a son, and no razor shall come upon his head, for the boy shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb. And he shall begin to deliver Israel from the hands of the Philistines. So what's happened? An angel of the Lord, or the angel of the Lord, appears to this young lady and says, you haven't had any kids, but you're going to, and he's going to be a Nazarite. Who else was a Nazarite in the scriptures that you know of? John the Baptizer? That would be a good guess, I think. So this young man is supposed to be a Nazarite. She's not supposed to not supposed to drink any wine, not supposed to shave his head. Verse 6. Then the woman came and told her husband, saying, a man of God came to me, and his appearance was like the appearance of the angel of God, very awesome. And I did not ask him where he came from, nor did he tell me his name. But he said to me, behold, you shall conceive and give birth to a son. Now you shall not drink strong wine or strong drink, nor eat any unclean thing, for the boy shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb to the day of his death. Then Manoah, this is her husband, entreated the Lord and said, O Lord, please let the man of God whom you have sent come to us again, that he may teach us what to do for the boy who is to be born. And God listened to the voice of Manoah, and the angel of God came again to the woman. Oh, back to the woman. Not to both of them, but now to the woman as she was out in the field. And Manoah, her husband, was not with her. So the woman ran quickly and told her husband, behold, the man who came the other day has appeared to me. And then Manoah arose and followed his wife. And when he came to the man, he said to him, are you the man who spoke to the woman? And he said, I am. Now, it's interesting to me, and of course this is an English translation of the ancient Hebrew, but what does he ask? Are you the man who spoke to the woman? Not, did you just talk to my wife? It's like, okay, interesting. The angel says, I am. Verse 12, Manoah said, now when your words come to pass, what shall be the boy's mode of life and his vocation? So the angel of the Lord said to Manoah, let the woman pay attention to all that I said. She should not eat anything that comes from the vine, nor drink wine or strong drink, nor eat any unclean thing. Let her observe all that I commanded. Then Manoah said to the angel of the Lord, please let us detain you so that we may prepare a young goat for you. The angel of the Lord said to Manoah, though you detain me, I will not eat your food. But if you prepare a burnt offering, then offer it to the Lord. For Manoah did not know that he was the angel of the Lord. Manoah said to the angel of the Lord, what is your name, so that when your words come to pass, we may honor you? But the angel of the Lord said to him, why do you ask my name, seeing it is wonderful? So Manoah took the young goat with the grain offering, offered it on the rock to the Lord, and he performed wonders while Manoah and his wife looked on. So they prepared this offering, this meal, bring it to the angel. He doesn't know it's the angel of the Lord, and that's what the text says, but he brings this meal to him after the angel has said, you can bring it to me, but I won't eat it, but if you want to make an offering, that's fine. So there they are. And it says, he performed wonders while Manoah and his wife looked on. It doesn't elaborate about the wonders, except to say, in verse 20, for it came about when the flame went up from the altar toward heaven that the angel of the Lord ascended in the flame of the altar. When Manoah and his wife saw this, they fell on their faces to the ground. Now the angel of the Lord did not appear to Manoah or his wife again. And then Manoah knew that he was the angel of the Lord. So Manoah said to his wife, "We shall surely die, for we have seen God." But his wife said to him, "If the Lord had desired to kill us, he would not have accepted a burnt offering and a grain offering from our hands, nor would he have shown us all these things, nor would he have let us hear things like these, like this at this time." And then the woman gave birth to a son, named him Samson, and the child grew up, and the Lord blessed him. And the Spirit of the Lord began to stir him in Mahanadan between Zorah and Eshtaol. All right, now there's the story. That's how Manoah, came to be with child that was going to be Samson. And when I read this, I think she, to me, is the unsung hero here. First of all, she recognized the legitimacy of the message that the angel gave her. She didn't say, "Oh, I don't believe that. I've been barren all this time. There's no way for me to have a child now." She didn't poo-poo it, didn't degrade it. She accepted the message, and she honored this message, considering it true. She heard it, she honored it, and then she went and she told her husband. Remember this morning, Mike's lesson about marital relationships and submission to the husband? She goes and tells him that she saw an angel. And she does it both times because the angel appears to her twice when he's not around. I think that's interesting too. So the angel appears to her both times in verse 6 and in verse 10. She goes and reports to her husband what she has seen. And she showed honor to the messenger. If you look at verse 20, of course, this is where the angel ascends in the flame that came up from the sacrifice. And, of course, she and her husband both honor the messenger by falling on their faces to the ground. But then things kind of part ways a little bit between her and her husband. What does the husband say? "Oh man, we're going to die. We've seen God. That's the end of us." But she is the one who keeps a level head. And she says, well, you can read it for yourself. We can read it again. Verse 23. "If the Lord had desired to kill us, he would not have accepted a burnt offering and a grain offering from us." That's the first bit of logic that she reasons out with her husband. "Nor would he have shown us all these things." So she's thinking rightly. Now, I don't know if when you read this narrative for the first time, if you thought like she was thinking, "Now, why in the world would God send his angel to give you a message about having a son and then kill you? That doesn't make any sense at all." But see, we would be reading it from the standpoint of people who would be much more objective because we haven't experienced these awesome things, but they have. But she still keeps a level head. And she says to her husband, "God would not kill us. If he wanted to kill us, he could have, but he accepted our offering. And then he told us these things, and he showed us these things, and let us hear all of this." So she is the one who keeps a level head, and she is thoughtful about this whole encounter. She uses reason. She uses logic. And it's like, yeah, that's who I want to be. I want to, even though I experience something that'll get me all excited and fired up, I want to be smart about it. I want to think through it. I want to make good decisions about it. It's what we aspire to do as human beings, to be rational, to be logical and rational. That's what we want to do. And so I look at her and I think she's the pattern for us. She could have gone off, flown off the handle. "Oh no, yeah, you're right. We're going to die." But she didn't follow his lead because she saw that there was something better to grasp onto. So first hero, unsung hero, is Mrs. Manoah. Second one is in 2 Samuel. 2 Samuel chapter 20. So many interesting stories. I hate to call them stories because they're not stories like the three bears or Goldilocks and all that. These are accounts, but we can still call them stories because they're a narrative. 2 Samuel chapter 20, verse 1. Now a worthless fellow happened to be there whose name was Sheba, the son of Bichri, a Benjamite, and he blew the trumpet and said, "We have no portion in David, nor do we have inheritance in the son of Jesse. Every man to his tents, O Israel." So David has become king, and this man is right from the outset saying, we're not going to follow him. We're going to rebel against David. Now, by the way, who is David? God has said of David, he's a man after my own heart. What has God also done with David? He sent his prophet, Samuel, to anoint him to be the next king. So this is the man who is God's choice. Consider the contrast between Bichri and David. When Saul was trying to kill David and God delivered Saul into David's hand, David did not lift his hand against Saul. Why not? Because he knew Saul was God's anointed, even though God had rejected Saul. He was still God's anointed, and David, out of honor for God's anointing, would not lift his hand against Saul. But here is a man who throws all that away, who disregards God's choosing of David. So he leads a rebellion against him. When it says he blew the trumpet, that simply means he sounded the trumpet so that people would gather to him. And when they gathered to him, he said, "We're not following David." And that was his rebellion. So we drop down in the text to chapter 20 and verse 14. And by the way, we're going to read about Joab. Joab is the captain of David's armies. And so it says in verse 14, he, Joab, went through all the tribes of Israel to Abel, even Beth-Maacah, and all the Beerites. Those were the legalists of the day. They were the Beerites. They lived not too far from the Be-Wrongs, and they had to get together and work things out. But anyway, a lot of interesting names. They were gathered together and also went after them. They came and besieged him in Abel Beth Maacah. So what's happening? Well, this rebel, Sheba, the son of Bichri, a Benjamite, who's rebelled against David, has gone to this place, Abel Beth Maacah. And so Joab has taken his army and he has besieged this town, and he's going to level this town to get to that rebel. Verse 15 says, they besieged him in Abel Beth-Maacah, and they cast up a siege ramp against the city, and it stood by the rampart. And all the people who were with Joab were wreaking destruction in order to topple the wall. Verse 16, then a wise woman called from the city, "Here, here, please tell Joab, come here that I may speak with you." So he approached her, and the woman said, "Are you Joab?" And he answered, "I am." And then she said to him, "Listen to the words of your maidservant." And he answered, "I am listening." And then she spoke, saying, "Formerly they used to say, they will surely ask advice at Abel, and thus they ended the dispute." What's she saying? She's saying, this is a place known for wisdom, for resolving disputes. People used to come here. This was the proverb, basically, that they said. You need wisdom, you need to resolve a dispute, go up to Abel Beth-Maacah, and you can resolve it there. That's what she's telling Joab. Verse 19, she says, she continues, "I am of those who are peaceable and faithful in Israel. You are seeking to destroy a city, even a mother in Israel. Why would you swallow up the inheritance of the Lord?" So what's she doing? She's reasoning from the standpoint of righteousness. This city has a reputation for wisdom, for resolving disputes, and you've come and you've made war against us, and we don't even know why. What's going on here? She took the initiative. That's what we need to do when we see situations that need attention and nobody else is paying attention. What do we so often ask? Why doesn't somebody do something? Guess who she was? She was somebody. This is all we know about her. But she's got some kind of clout because she's the one on the wall saying, "Hey, let me talk to your captain over there." And they come and they talk to her. And this was her argument, not argument in a bad way, but her reasoning as to why all this is going on. Joab replied in verse 20, "Far be it from me that I should swallow up or destroy. Such is not the case. But a man from the hill country of Ephraim, Sheba, the son of Bichri by name, has lifted up his hand against King David. Only hand him over, and I will depart from the city." And the woman said to Joab, "Behold," now remember, this was a different day, "his head will be thrown to you over the wall." Yeah, that was a different day. It's almost as if she said, "Well, why didn't you say so? We'll throw his head to you." See, Joab is saying, "Just hand him over and we'll get out of here." And she said, "Well, how about if we just toss you his head?" Whew. Verse 22, "Then the woman wisely came to all the people." Wisely came to all the people. Holy Spirit said, put that in there. She's wise. "They cut off the head of Sheba, the son of Bichri, and threw it to Joab. So he blew the trumpet. Joab blew the trumpet, gathered everybody together, and they were dispersed from the city, each to his tent. Joab also returned to the king at Jerusalem." Smart woman. Now, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands how many of you knew about this lady. You may have read this before. And this is the kind of thing, you read it and it sort of sticks with you, because she's a standout. She took the initiative, even though she's a woman. She's a wise woman, obviously, and she's probably been involved in the past in what she was talking about. People coming and seeking counsel at this place, Abel Beth Maacah, that's where they would resolve disputes. And she just did that. She just resolved a dispute. So she takes the initiative. Instead of asking, why doesn't somebody do something, she considered herself somebody, and she did something. And she sought counsel with her adversary. By the way, where else do we read about that? If you've got an issue with somebody, go talk to them about it. Well, keep a finger here and look at Matthew chapter 5. Sermon on the Mount. Jesus said, this is verse 23 of Matthew chapter 5. "Therefore, if you're presenting your offering at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother, and then come and present your offering. Make friends quickly with your opponent." Make friends quickly with your opponent at law while you are with him on the way, so that your opponent may not hand you over to the judges and the judge to the officer and you be thrown into prison. Do you see the parallel here? Jesus says when there's a dispute, it's got to be resolved. What did Jesus come to do but to resolve the dispute between God and humanity? And that's exactly what he did. God is all about resolving disputes, about reconciling people to one another. And that's what this woman did. And she hadn't even read what Jesus had said, because her time was about 1,000 years before Jesus set foot on the planet in the flesh. So here is a woman who is very wise, and she keeps a level head, and she applies thoughtful reason in this whole situation. Remember what Isaiah said, or what God said through Isaiah in Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 18. Now, Isaiah is it's a volume of prophetic teachings, God trying to get Israel to turn, and some of its narrative about God working with the kings and the leadership. But at the very beginning of Isaiah's writings, God says, "Come and let us reason together. Though your sins are as scarlet, they shall be as white as wool." God wants to reason with us. He's willing to reason with us. And that's what this woman did. She took the initiative to reason with those who were coming against her. And God wants that to happen. She agreed with what was a reasonable and a just demand. We could call it that. Joab says, "Hand this guy over to me. He's a rebel against the king." And she says, "All right, we'll do that. By the way, how about if we just throw his head to you?" That was reasonable. That was just. And that's what happened. A lot of interesting things in the Bible. It was a different day back then. Maybe we need to bring some of that back. All right, I better move on. Third one, this is the third and final one we'll talk about tonight, 2 Kings chapter 5. You may be a little more familiar with this account, because I've probably talked about him quite a bit through the years, but this is about Naaman. Naaman the Syrian, who was also a leper. 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 1. Just read a couple verses to get started. It says, "Now Naaman, captain of the army, the king of Aram." Aram is Syria, by the way. Syria is Aram. The Arameans are the Syrians. "He was a great man with his master and highly respected, because by him the Lord had given victory to Aram. The man was also a valiant warrior, but he was a leper. Now the Arameans had gone out in bands and had taken captive a little girl from the land of Israel. She waited on Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, 'I wish that my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria, and then he would cure him of his leprosy.' Naaman went in and told his master," his master would be the king, by the way, king of Israel, "'thus and thus spoke the girl who is from the land of Israel.'" Or I said king of Israel, king of the Arameans, king of the Syrians. So she's the first hero in this narrative, that little girl. Doesn't say how old she was. Wouldn't you like to know how old she was? Was she a preteen? Was she a teenager? She was a young girl. She wasn't even Syrian. She was an Israelite, and she was taken, kidnapped, absconded with in one of the raids the Syrians made against Israel. And by the way, by that time, the Israelites had left God. So don't be too upset about that. She might be better off with the Syrians than she was with the Israelites. And what did it just say in verse 5? The Lord had given him victory. So there's that. But what does this little girl do? In her heart, she has her master's best interest central. And she says, "I wish he could go see the prophet that's in Samaria." How did she know about that prophet? I have no idea. But she did know about the prophet. And that information was not something she kept to herself. "I'm not going to tell him about that guy. He might go and get cured." No, she wanted him to have a curing. And so she says to her mistress, "I wish that my master were with the prophet who's in Samaria. He would cure him of his leprosy." That was enough. The message from that little girl seemed legitimate in the eyes of Naaman for him to go to his master, the king of the nation. And he says, "Hey, I need to go down there. My little servant girl says there's a prophet, and there must have been something about that young lady's message and that some young lady herself that he said, that's exactly what I need to do and I'm going to do." And the king of Aram gave him his blessing to do that. So she's the first unsung hero. The willingness to spread some good news for the benefit of somebody you care about. That's an evangelistic message right there, if I've ever heard one. Well, then we drop down to verse 9. "Naaman came with his horses and his chariots and stood at the doorway of the house of Elisha. Elisha sent a messenger to him saying, 'Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times and your flesh will be restored to you and you'll be clean.' But Naaman was furious and he went away and he said, 'Behold, I thought he'd surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the place and cure the leper. Are not Arbana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?' So he turned and went away in a rage." You ever make that mistake? You have a preconceived idea of how things are supposed to be, and when you get to that situation and it's not what you thought, you get upset about it? That's what he did. And he was fixing, as we would say, to go away and stay a leper. That's what he was about to do. Then in verse 13, here come the unsung heroes, his servants. "They came near and said, 'My father, had the prophet told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then when he says to you, wash and be clean?'" That woman in Abel Beth Maaca took the initiative to say something. These servants are taking the initiative to say something. They've heard what the prophet told him to do. They know that he's not going to do it, that he's upset, he's angry. Now, if you're thinking about your own welfare, you might say, oh, I'm not speaking to him. He's upset. I'll just make him madder. It'll just make it worse. But they don't. They speak to him. They reason with him. Oh, we're back to reasoning, aren't we? Isn't that what Mrs. Manoah did, Samson's mom? She reasoned. You know, why would God kill us? Since he sent his angel, and he's accepted our sacrifices, and he's given us this message about a son being born to me, why would he now kill us? That doesn't make any sense at all. And she reasoned that out. And then the woman at Abel Beth Maacah, she reasoned also. She said, you know, I need to talk to this guy. Find out who's in charge. Why are they attacking our city? And her reasoning led to the salvation of the city. And here are these servants reasoning with Naaman. If he'd asked you to do some great thing, you would have done it. How much more to do this? Now think about where they're putting themselves. They're convincing their master to do something that he thinks is ridiculous. Well, what if he dips 7 times and he doesn't come up clean? I mean, they don't know. They're servants of the Syrian captain. They're putting themselves in a situation where if that didn't happen, maybe he'll be even madder than he was before he went into the river, because at least he was dry before, and now he's a wet, angry man. But they convinced him. And he went to the water. And he dipped himself 7 times, just like the prophet said, and you know the outcome of the story. But that never would have happened if it hadn't been for a little girl willing to say something. That never would have happened if it hadn't been for a little girl whose heart went out to her master and his pain, his bad situation, and wanting that to be better. Bless her heart. She must have had a good one. It never would have happened if the servants had been cowards. If the servants had said, I'm not saying anything. He's angry. He's upset. Let's just go on back to Syria and things won't be any worse than they were before we came. But they reasoned with him. It's like reasoning pops up with Samson's mom. Reasoning pops up with this woman in Abel Beth Maacah. Reasoning pops up again with the servants of Naaman. Is there a lesson here for you and me? We don't even know their names. Samson's mom, we're not told her name. We're not told the name of that woman in Abel Beth Maacah. We're not told the name of that little servant girl. We're not told the name of any of these servants. But we're told what they did. And it's so remarkable. And at the same time, in a way, it's not remarkable at all. Because all they did was look at the situation and do what made sense. Do what was reasonable. Do what was logical. Maintained a level head, as we would say, and went with that. So there's the lesson for us tonight. Unsung heroes. You and I can be heroes if we simply use our reason when it comes to God. And that's all he has ever asked us to do. He gave us all the evidence we would ever need. He's given us this book that from Genesis to Revelation. It's evidence that he is who he says it is. He gave us a whole world, a universe that we can look into in the night sky. That's an interesting thing. We've learned that if you were on other planets, other heavenly bodies, their atmospheres are such that you wouldn't be able to look off and see anything in outer space, but our planet is unique. We can stand on the surface of this planet and look into the heavens and the night sky, and we can see things that people can't see. If you were even able to be anywhere else, you couldn't see it, but we can. And all of that is evidence, as David wrote in the Psalms, the glory of God. He's giving us evidence, and he wants us to use reason and logic. So what will you do? We're going to stand and sing a song of encouragement and invitation. And if you are outside of Christ, I hope you will use your reason and logic to come to Christ tonight. And as you live your life from day to day, and things pop up, and it looks like trouble, looks like difficulty, use your reason to say, well, God's gotten me through everything else so far. At this age, you know, when I was younger, it wasn't quite as easy. But now at this age, I look back and I say, man, all those things I was afraid of all through life. You remember, I remember being in elementary school. Oh, I'm not ready for that test. It's the science fair. I remember there's a comedian, his name's Brian Regan, and he wakes up in the morning, oh, today's science fair, what am I going to do? And he goes and gets a foam cup, puts some dirt in it, and takes that to class. Brian, what do you call that? Oh, it's a cup of dirt. That's kind of how we'll be if we're not ready, but with reason? Hey, anyway, we're going to stand and sing the song of encouragement and invitation for anybody who might need any help tonight that we can help you with. Let's stand and sing.